Hello. Here we are, the last day of build. How are you guys feeling? Wow, that was not huge. Really? You guys have, you got new phones, you got new, surfaces, and lots of free beer. Beers and free beer. So, you should be feeling better than that.
I love you, Dave!
There we go. Okay, I want to give a little bit of fair warning before we get started. Well, let's do that in just a second. My name is David Starr, and this is Josh Weber. How you doing, Josh?
Pretty good. How are you all?
And we got our Twitter handles up there today so that we can be Twitter bait for you for the next hour. You'll enjoy that. Now, here's the due process warning that I'm going to make. We've been talking with you guys over the past several days, and what I learned as I spoke with attendees at the booth and in sessions is that you guys, in large part, have not been able to play with 2012 much yet at all, the Visual Studio 2012 stuff. Now, some of you probably have. That said, we're going to spend some time talking about the raw developer experience, the raw developer tools, the TDD patterns, et cetera, that are in 2012. And we are then going to move over and talk about testing managed store applications, but I just wanted to let you know that if you've been developing in 2012 for a while now, we are going to spend some time just on the tools themselves. All righty. Ready?
Yeah, let's go.
We're going to talk a little bit first about the state of developer testing. Now, I mentioned yesterday in my talk that I have been at Microsoft for all of 1 month. Before that, I was the chief software craftsman at scrum.org, and before that, I spent a lot of time as an ALM MVP, an independent guy running around helping teams and organizations make things better in their lives. And I got to meet a lot of teams over the last several years, and I got to see what's true in the world of software development, and particularly test-driven, test-first development. Well, this is true. Given the fact that we are sitting here on the very last day of build and you guys are all passionate enough about this to be in this room, you probably are stunned right now. Surely everybody, like me, you're thinking, writes their code test first. Turns out that's not the case. Yeah, you knew that. And here's the other thing. There's a fundamental misunderstanding on most people's parts about what it means to use tests in a test-first manner to drive out the designs of our code. Most people think that unit tests, most developers out there who are using unit test frameworks, use them to do what we call pin functionality in place. Pinning functionality in place means I'm going to write a test that locks down the behavior or the response of some method so that I can now run this test in regression later and be sure nothing changed. And how many of you, I'm not asking actually for a raise of hands, how many of you have come up to me over the course of this week and said, Dave, I want this feature back where I can right-click my class and say, generate test? You poor folks, you're missing the point. Because if we do that, what we're doing is we're pinning our test functionality for regression. And there's just a lot more value to be had. Now, here's another truth about tests in general. I have worked with teams that say, we're doing test-driven development, and then they do the air quote thing, because our management said we had to. And it turns out it's really, really hard to test legacy code, and this is where most people are stuck, right? Here's another reason that people address the subject of unit testing. My manager won't let me. So I'm going to echo a little bit of Bob Martin, if you've ever heard him talk on this subject, and tell you that that's not your boss's decision, it's yours. Be a professional. This is a quote from a conversation that I had with a client less than 6 months ago. So remember that last thing, or the second to last bullet on the previous slide, it said, hey, We add tests to our code because our management tells us to. 100% code coverage clearly means that we have very high quality code and systems. Therefore, we got 100% code coverage on everything we write. And quite literally, there were no asserts in the code. So this is a problem. Here's something that I heard the first day I came to Microsoft a month ago. I'm going to propose to you that this is good. So the idea that this test manager has is that those unit tests that the developers write, they're great. We need them. They're awesome. And what they're for is for the developers to drive out the design and shape and form of their code. So when my team, he said, my test folks who are on the team, get a hold of this project, we're going to not use those for regression. We're going to do purposeful regression. And they even use unit testing frameworks to build those integration tests, which makes a great deal of sense. I really like thinking about test-driven development this way. This is what we've been talking about thus far. And there's the same thing being said with fewer words by Uncle Bob, right? Take a moment and read this. The world is no longer flat. The world now asks us to write tests first. And I'm proud that all of you are here and know that. That's awesome. Yet, this is also true. And this poor guy probably needs to read The Structure of Scientific Revolutions, published in 1962, I would point out. All right, let's move on to talking about the unit testing ecosystem inside Visual Studio. It turns out there are some interesting things out there. And I didn't know what I'm showing you on this slide until recently. There are many MS test runtimes. So that unit testing framework that we all love, right? There are several versions of it. It actually has some implications for us, as we'll see. I would encourage you to look into this issue enough to know if you're using MS test in your tests at work, which version of MS test you're using. Because it turns out that they version on different cycles. What? Yep. So we have one that we're mostly familiar with, I'm sure. That's MS Test for .NET. That's the one that we see all the time. You put your expected exception attribute up there, and Bob's your uncle. So we have one for native C++, different one that talks about managed code for Windows Store applications, which we'll be playing with today. We'll see that there's some uniqueness about it. And then there's the native story, or the XAML story for C++ in the store as well. So let's go play with some tools. Now what we're gonna do here is, I'm gonna be Josh's code monkey because his team is the one who actually built most of the things that we're gonna be talking about for the next little while, okay?
Here, let me step over.
Yeah.
So to lead off, the most important thing is that in Visual Studio 2012, we took the unit test experience and started from scratch. We went back to base and built up a brand new experience, new tooling from scratch. It's not an update of old Visual Studio 2010. And the most important reason why we did that is because we took the TDD experience to heart. Our experience is based upon the TDD workflow, the TDD style first. That's what we assume is the best practices, and that's the tooling that we want to do. And hopefully, that's what we've provided. I was talking to a customer yesterday who mentioned that for the first time, he can mention to clients and consulting and say, Visual Studio 2012 has a TDD story. And he said it's the first time he's been able to say that. So I was quite happy. So to start off, we'll just go through some of the tour of a few of the new features that we have. So to start off, we have basically all of your tests are shown in a nice two-level flat list. You don't have to dig down through a hierarchy of objects to find your tests. They're just all shown. And by default, they're shown with the most important test first. So the most important test to you is a failing test. So they're listed at the top. Skip tests are listed underneath that, or inconclusive, depending upon your framework. And below that, it'll list all of your passing tests.
So right now, all we're doing is running this set of tests. It's in this one code file, and we can see that they're grouped into sets of three. And you mentioned a little something about priority order. Mm-hmm. What's your priority order?
Priority order would be failing tests, skip tests, and then passing tests.
Okay. So what about tests that already ran, they passed? Are you going to run them again at all?
Yes, we'll run them all based on your manual intervention. If you hit run all your tests will run. You can have a few selection criteria. If you hit on the run command, you'll see a few options to choose different sets of tests that will potentially be valuable.
Okay. I would point out that a few of the features that we're seeing on the screen today are available to you. They're in CTP of update 1. This is that Visual Studio shipping on a 3-month cadence that you've probably heard about this week. Well, the CTP bits are out, and that's what I'm running. So everything that you see here is available to you. There are some things that are only available, though, from that update install. Just thought I'd mention that.
Yeah, definitely keep that in mind if you notice something on our demo machine that you don't see with your RTM bits. If that's the case, I highly suggest everybody try out the CTPs. We're definitely committed to the CTP and the quarterly update system. So speaking of running tests, the next most important thing is, why did I have to hit run all? Shouldn't my tests just get out of my way? Shouldn't I just be able to write code and not have to worry about it? And for that reason, we enabled the continuous test runner feature. So if you notice up there in the corner, there's a little tiny button. The button basically says run tests after build. Turning that button on will make your tests automatically run every time you do build. So it's kind of hard to demo with a quick test, but you should be able to see a little change.
Yeah. So if you'll notice, I just did a build, rebuild solution. And because it was the second pass through, remember that smart logic that he was describing a few moments ago? Only the failing tests are being run. Because why bother continuing? Fix this before you move on. This is part of that TDD focus.
So the smart test execution works by running your fail tests and your new tests because you don't know if a new test has failed or passed yet. And then if they all pass, it then does a full run all solution. So the idea is getting you to the tests that matter most quickest.
So let's see. What you're saying is if I come in here and I pull out these failing tests, let's do it this way, and then I come back up and build, what should happen? Little typo there. My human compiler didn't catch me today, guys. You're sleeping out there.
Must be early morning.
There's another fail. All right.
So in this case, we ran all the tests, and you might notice that we still have a red bar, but we have a number of skipped and inconclusive tests. And if you have tests that are inconclusive or you have tests that were not run, you can't honestly say, I have a green state. So they're still important, and they should be called out, and you should be progressing to identifying why those tests are there.
We have some really good news, too. You guys love the new theme, right? There's some color.
So, working into our next big feature, one of the things that we did when we went back to scratch and built our way up is that we no longer are locking you into a single test framework. So we built our entire test architecture to be extendable and able to handle third-party plugins. So we have support for a number of frameworks. We've worked closely with some of the people in the community to enable out-of-the-box support for some frameworks such as XUnit, NUnit, SpecFlow. There's a Jasmine adapter called Hutzpah that's released on the gallery. And I'm going to let David show you some of these things you can do with the different mixing of frameworks.
So let's walk into this code a little bit and just look at what's happening. I've taken two references in this class. I've taken a dependency on NUnit and a dependency on the Microsoft MS Test unit testing framework. I have two test classes in this one file, and they are both running. This is out-of-the-box behavior. We support the ability for any unit test development team to integrate directly with Visual Studio. In fact, let's see, let's add another one. I'll show you how easy it is to do this. I'm going to take a dependency now on XUnit. We'll add wrong one. I'm going to actually pull it off NuGet. So what happens when I pull this off NuGet?
So when you pull it off NuGet, it'll download the library binaries that are needed to execute, but you'll still need the XUnit adapter that you'll find on the...
Let's see. So we want a class here. We'll call it XUnit test. And we'll have init one fact. Of course, we'll add that reference. And there we have three passing tests from three different unit testing frameworks in the same file.
So the extensibility model for doing this is that we treat all frameworks the same. We don't make any special allowances. For example, for the MS Test framework, they all write adapters that plug into our system, and there's new community engagement on adapters almost every day. We just found out last week that someone wrote a Google Test adapter that was done independently from our, that we're trying to reach out to see if they need any help, but they didn't contact us to do it, and it's out there on the gallery, and I think we actually found some new ones this morning in the adapter. So it's definitely very straightforward to write an adapter to plug in whatever framework you want into Visual Studio itself. So mix and match as you see fit.
So these are the projects that for their unit testing solutions have provided an adapter to Visual Studio, as Josh was just saying. And we, of course, he mentioned the Google one. We just saw this one this morning. This is an open source project, or rather a community-based, I should say that.
Yeah,
it's a community-based project. You can tell because he's a good developer and told us all it's going to break probably. So I don't know who this gentleman is, Niles Hebling, but thank you, sir. So he's working on a Silverlight unit test adapter. Here we have Chutzpah, which is a unit test adapter for running JavaScript unit tests inside this unit test explorer. JavaScript, right inside the unit test explorer.
So I'm going to mention a few points about performance. We've done a very careful job to try to stay very performant, and we feel that we are very, very good on our performance. We have very minimal overhead, and the majority of the contribution to performance is dependent on the framework runner that you pick up. So depending upon the framework stuff, we try to stay as much out of the way as possible, and we feel that we make very little impact on the overall performance runtime that we'll be able to run pretty fast. I think David has a quick little sample of that.
It's thinking really hard.
Yeah, you had a lot of tests in there, right?
Yeah. Let's see. Got a successful build. Isn't this always the way?
Yeah, it's live demos here, folks.
All right. What'd you guys do for performance? Tell us about that, because I know that at one point you were ready to ship, you thought, and went back to the board.
Yeah, so we performance hold features that I would definitely really like to see, but it has to pass a performance threshold for us to release a new feature. The other point that is important on performance is that we definitely scale. So we've had this on internal usage up to 30,000 real tests for some of the internal teams doing development within the developer division, and it does scale pretty significantly to at least 30,000 tests, and there should be no real limit other than practical limits on the ability for the Unit Test Explorer to scale up.
Okay, human compiler, does anybody see anything?
Yeah, that's 30,000 across, one solution.
So I'll see if you can figure out what's going on, Josh.
All right.
I'll tell you this story. For TechEd, we're down in Florida. I was sitting with Peter Provost, who was instrumental in bringing this unit test runner to us. And we sat down and tried to kill it one night. And what that meant was we had a T4 template that would generate a bunch of unit tests and a bunch of system under test type classes. And we got up to 60,000 or something like that tests. We put a millisecond wait on them. We're actually using exactly that right now, but it doesn't seem to be firing for us. And as a result, we couldn't kill it. We could not kill this thing. And the reason is because of that continuous run feature. What it does, are the T4 templates in?
I don't think so.
Okay. What the continuous test runner does is every time I build, it starts over with tests on a new run instance. Think about it that way, a new run instance. So it may not finish running all of the tests, but as soon as I say do it again, it'll do it again. And it'll take any test that failed and put those first. So in other words, tests, once I turn on this continuous test button, are always running in the background. Thanks. So that was 904. And we can look at the load that it's taking, which is a 20 millisecond wait. That's all we're looking at here. So we got 904 of these guys. And
so the first thing that you think when you have 900 tests or more is how to get access to specific tests. So we've implemented a search that allows for searching by default by name. So you can do a quick search for a name, test name.
We can do test method, I don't know, zero. There are all my test method zeros.
In addition to that, we've enabled a few filter characteristics. So you can search by specialty metadata. For example, you probably do an error message search.
See these things down here? Oh, we don't have a test failing at the moment. Let's try a fully qualified name, maybe. So see if there's anything in there called my. No. Test class. So these are, let's find the in-unit one. So there's my one in-unit test method that's currently active.
So if you do the drop-down box, you can see that we have a number of options to do filtering. In addition to that, we have some clever grouping options. So you can clear the filter. And then you can show that we have grouping for traits, being the big one.
Well, actually, let's look at this. Let's look at duration. So we see that this is something that you're probably interested in quite a bit, because some tests take longer than others, and we need to know where to focus to go kill the hot points, right? So this is one way to do that. And this makes a lot more sense, the filter by project, when you have more than one test project, obviously. But I think it's important to note that we don't have a full hierarchical tree here. Why is that?
So the idea is that through grouping options, you should be able to group based upon smarter things, based upon duration, based upon project, that allow you to get to the test that you're really looking for without needing to search through a organization that's really based upon how it's organized on file disk.
Okay.
The other interesting option is trait. So trait's an interesting one. Trait is basically grouping by a framework agnostic, basically, field. The traits are determined by each framework individually, and we simply allow them to pass whatever method-level metadata they attach to each method. So we can show you a few examples.
So here I've added something called test property. to an MS test test. Now I'll rerun this. Actually, before I do this, no, that's fine. We can keep running all 900 of them. There we are. This is our new one. We can see that this test is being identified by each trait uniquely. See what I've done there is I've decorated this particular test method with whatever metadata I want in a key value pair structure, and it actually gives me a way to organize my test suite that is not necessarily hierarchical, because there's a design language at work in the unit test explorer that says we're never going to be more than two levels deep in a hierarchy. Okay? And there are some really cool little overloads for this. For example, owner. What is owner?
Owner is a MS test specific attribute that's listed as a trait.
So Joe just showed up as owner. Now what these really are, when I add owner, for example, is an overload of the test property for convenience sake. So I should come up with another owner in here once we get to that test. Additionally, what are some other overloads?
Some of the few other overloads is test category and priority.
So can I be in more than one category?
Yes, you can be as many categories as you like.
So I could be in a unit test. This is probably a terrible example because this should never be true, but I can also be an integration test. And with this, within one test project, I can have my unit tests, integration tests, whatever else you want to call it, and then through the use of smart filtering, only run those that I want to be in scope right now. Because I could just come up here and say, only run these. That's the point when we're done running tests. It's just going. It's just going right now. It's going to keep going. But it's not slowing down my development experience at all. Anytime it hits a failing test, though, it's going to let me know.
So the idea is the test explorer stays out of your way. You just write tests. You write that. Test explorer churns away in the background.
This is the same feature set applied by InUnit. I think we are kind of getting...
Oh, it's the 900 tests.
It's the 900.
You're churning through a lot of tests there constantly.
Let me pull these off. We'll drop that out for just a second. Do a new run. Let's do a rebuild. How do I cancel this guy, Josh? I can't recall how to do that. Sure. There is a cancel the run.
I'm not sure.
That's okay. Move on. We can see the unit test methods are showing up grouped by those traits. Both InUnit and MS test tests will show up in the same categorization scheme that we choose.
So, if you go back to duration, you're going to want to probably clean. Yeah.
Yeah, let's clean. Okay.
Check closing. Yeah. Turn off continuous test runner. There we go.
Okay. Go.
So we've implemented a new feature that allows for a quick access to profiling. So the Visual Studio Profiler is built in, but it can be somewhat cumbersome to configure. So the idea being, if you have a slow running test, for example, this 4-second test, you should be able to right click on it and then immediately go to profiling. So when this happens, it's basically going to instrument your binaries for you without configuration and then execute your test with the binaries instrumented, collect the profiling data, and then done that. Yeah, I think you need probably check closing the Explorer and rebooting.
Say it out loud, Josh. Tell me what to do, man.
Try closing the test explorer and seeing reloading.
Close the test explorer. Yeah, I killed it.
I think with all your loading and unloading projects, I think it got confused.
All right.
I'm not sure where the build system's at right now either.
All right, that's understandable. Do a build here. We got a reasonable build. We'll come over to test, go to Windows, pull up our Test Explorer, dock this guy on the right because I'm that old. How many people in here dock to the right for their unit tests and dock to the left for Solution Explorer? Yeah, we were all in C++ back in the day, weren't we, boys?
Yeah. That's unfortunate. I think we're going to have to try the Visual Studio reboot technique.
Think so, huh?
Yeah, I don't know if you guys are aware of that technique. It's occasionally useful.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? I have another.
I don't know. You could probably just reload the project.
Yep. And we'll go back to our most recent project. Load time's not bad at all.
Yeah, look at that. So we'll run them all.
There we go.
Search my iteration.
You can see it incrementing right there.
Eventually we'll hit that slow test in there. Ah, there it is. So now we should be able to right-click on it, profile.
So this is new in update 1, right?
This is a new feature for update 1. I actually like this feature. This is pretty cool. So it was just one click, quick execution of profile. Should run in the background, take a little time. Did have to profile a 4-second test, so it does take some time. And now you immediately get the profiler graph. There was no configuration, no need to change anything, no need to instrument your binaries, no need to do the profiler configuration. You can find out, why is that pesky test taking 4 seconds? And it looks to be that some clever developer put a 4-second task wait in there. That's probably not helping out.
So there's my code. I can get directly to code from that report. Keep losing scope there. And there we have it. This is exactly what was reported to me as hot path. So this, by the way, is the new thread.sleep, right? Everybody aware of that one? In our new async task-driven world, this is the new thread.sleep.
So the last feature that we'll go ahead and do is that in addition to profiling with easy access, we also have the ability to do easy access for code coverage. So we've now provided the ability to do dynamic code coverage. There's no need to run it every single time with data that you're never going to look at. Instead, you can just pull the code coverage data when you need it. So if you go to a test, you should be able to just right-click on it and provide the code coverage for that test. Or using the test menu, you can analyze code coverage for your entire solution.
Here we go. Note that I'm using XUnit to do this. That tells me that this feature is perfectly compatible with other unit testing frameworks, yeah?
Yes.
Okay, so here it is. And this time I want to run it with code coverage enabled just for that one test. Here we get code coverage results popping up. And we can find out what's taking so long. What's taking so long is that if you pay attention to class names, our indecisive and ineffective manager is having a hard time making a decision already. Why don't you? So if we follow him in and then turn on, well, let's see. I need to turn on the coverage.
You go to the coverage results?
Yeah, let me just do it again. Okay. It's that fast. It's no big deal. And then we turn on highlighting. We can see what's been covered, what hasn't been covered by the test, which is not much right now.
Yeah.
But it shows the point.
So the one thing that you guys also might have noticed is that during this whole time, we didn't make use of test lists. We didn't make use of test settings files. We shouldn't have to use these custom configuration. However, we still do have backwards compatibility that if you are upgrading from a 2010 project that uses test settings, that uses test lists, you should be able to still load them and make use of them.
So you're talking about test settings, this guy.
Which you can still select an existing test setting file if that's how you had set up your project to start.
Okay, now why did we do this? Why are test settings gone, do you think? Who uses test settings? There you go, that's why.
Maybe they're just afraid of you.
No, the old look and feel of testing inside Visual Studio acknowledged the fact that MS Test was a multi-purpose multi-purpose testing platform, really, and we did a lot of things with it. We did load testing. We did some perf testing with it, in fact. We did unit testing, but also you could use it to get code coverage on manual test runs. There are all kinds of things you could do with MS Test. And this is a step back from that and says we're going to focus this Unit Test Explorer experience just on the test-driven developer.
That's correct.
Yep. And so test lists were one of those things that we could exploit to do things that maybe unit tests, if we were thinking about the test-driven experience, probably don't make sense. Things like setting up different runtime hosts for our tests. Things like, you know, setting up various test agents in the cloud of our personal network, not a cloud, but on your network, you get these test agents out there, and we configure all that via the test settings. That's all still legitimate for things like running big load tests and stuff. Not so much when it comes to unit tests. Yeah?
That's correct.
Cool. All right. Now, we promised that we would actually talk about testing Windows 8 store applications, which we're going to do next. But before we do that, I forgot to say this in the beginning. Please don't wait till the end to ask questions. So if there's something that you guys want to see, if there is anything that comes up that you have a question about, just step to the microphone right now, and we'll talk. Go ahead and step to the microphone, sir, because there are people who are watching via video stream.
When we when you do exception testing, it throws an exception, of course, and then you don't get the last squirrely bracket in your function, and you don't get the code coverage for that. It drives me crazy. Could we do something about that?
Yeah, I'll take a look. Send me an email. For an expected exception or the cert.throws? I'm not super familiar with it off the top of my head, but send me an email. I'll follow up.
Here's the good news, sir. That thing that bugs you to death is this guy. You found the one guy out of 93,000 employees at Microsoft who can actually help you with that issue.
True statement. I love feedback, so definitely send me any feedback.
Yes, sir.
So I'm sure everybody applauds the pluggability of different unit test frameworks into your test runner. I'm curious if there's a similar idea about extensibility for the profiling or the coverage reporting to use third-party code coverage or third-party profiling tools rather than just relying on the Visual Studio items as well.
Yeah, that's a really interesting
it's
idea.
It's a harder integration story, yeah, but I'm just curious if there's thought about that.
It's a really interesting idea. I wouldn't say that we've thought about it really deeply. But it's definitely a really interesting idea that to extend more and more extensibility points. We do like extensibility, but it's hard to cover all of the scenarios that everybody's looking for.
Yeah, thanks.
Yes, sir.
The profiling looks really good. Do you know which Visual Studio SKUs it's supported on?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you, sir.
The profiling, is that only on Visual Studio Ultimate, or is it on lower SKUs as well?
I believe profiling's on premium.
I think it's premium and up.
Okay, and is there a possibility of getting a continual test run, so when a code file changes, to rerun the failing tests?
Are you talking about run on save?
Kind of. So there's a tool called ncrunch I use.
Right. Yes. So to get the exact behavior of ncrunch, bind your control S key to build.
You don't need to save the file with ncrunch, though. That's the nice thing.
I'm sorry?
You don't need to save the file with ncrunch, I don't think.
No, that's because they capture the stream and do it in the background for you. But you still don't run a test until it's buildable.
Good point. They're watching an in-memory graph of your code. We're not doing that right now. There are some folks that don't think that the idea of save equals build, save equals run tests is real. We're a minority. Our voices are loud, and we're getting there. So one key binding at a time, sir. We're trying to get there.
Thanks.
You bet.
Hey, Dave, the profiler works in Express with Windows Store apps.
Is that true?
By the way,
I did not know that. And that's Mr. Brian Randall, who knows more about the SKU sets of Visual Studio than any salesperson in the field. I absolutely trust that what he just said was spot on. So Express, you get profiling
for Windows
apps in Express.
Hi.
Cool.
Regarding the support for multiple testing frameworks, such as NUnit out of the box,
yes,
does
sir.
That also work in a CI build in hosted TFS?
Yes, so it does work in a team build scenario. The RTM experience was a little bit rough because you needed to get the adapter to the adapter bits to the team build scenario. But we've actually addressed that need in update one, that there's now the ability to embed your adapter into your NuGet package. So if the framework adapters pick up that, which I believe they should be shortly, then you should just be able to get a NuGet reference, which will then be picked up on your build server, and everything should work smoothly. If not, there's a fallback where you can configure your build server. But we are very conscious of the team build scenario, and the third-party framework support should work through command line, team build scenario, all the scenarios.
Great. Thanks.
All right. Ready to talk about these cool, slick, new, touchy things? Here's a good one. I like to distill things down to their essence. As such, here is... Oh, of course, I have to set my startup project. No worries. I have a very, very simple Windows Store application here that simply lists the items that are in various folders. So let's just show you. It's that simple, okay? In that folder on my machine, there is a set of files. In this case, a set of folders. Because we're good test-driven developers, we don't ever need to look at the UI again. That was a little bit of a joke there. okay, so not necessarily the case, but for the rest of our discussions here, we're not going to look at the UI anymore. What we will see is how we've sort of strung together the functionality of this application. And my first inclination when I approached... When I approached building Windows Store applications, and I'm going to confess something here. I had never touched XAML before I started playing with Windows Store applications. So WPF, Silverlight, those technologies passed me by. I was very much a web developer and just wasn't there with it. Well, when the Windows Store model came around, I started playing with XAML, and being the very test-driven and opinionated developer that I am, I've come to really appreciate some of the inherent structures that the XAML model makes us do. Now, one of the things that I used to hear people describe was declarative behaviors. And when I heard that, I thought, oh, I will never touch that technology. It turns out all that really means is they're talking about things like animations, which I'm glad to hand off to that runtime. In fact, well, I also approached my first application for Windows Store the way I would approach a Windows Form application. I put this little button click handler in place. And so we can go look at what this handler is doing. It's doing a couple of things. We know that there's a bunch of async in our world now, so the execution of this method goes this far, then it returns. Right? Then, when we get the results from what are the items in my music library, we bind up, first we build a list of things, and then we bind that list to a list box that's shown on the screen. It's about as simple of an application as I could think up. And why isn't this good enough? Well, this isn't the right thing to do for the same reason it's not the right thing to do in web forms or in Windows forms. And we have patterns for those. Typically with those technologies, ASP.NET web forms and Windows forms, we use Model View Presenter to separate out and tease apart the aspects of our user interface. And we can do the same thing in XAML applications, I think, in even cleaner ways. Well, if we start just by looking at this problem, this is a static method coming off of a singleton. How many people were in the discussion yesterday on stubs and shibs? Okay, so we know, because we discussed it yesterday, that singletons are the root of all evil. Every war that's ever been fought on the face of the planet was over singletons, right? We don't make those anymore. Okay. Well, I have one to deal with. How do I deal with it? Well, if I don't deal with this in some other way, I'm going to have to unit test like this. Although this is an integration test, we can readily agree pretty quickly that this is an integration test. What am I doing? In my test initialize, or in my setup, I am actually writing out some files to that library. I will then exercise that library, you know, go out there and read those files off the file system, check that, in fact, I met my expectations, and be done. This isn't a crazy thing to do. It is, however, to be discouraged. Well, how can we get the logic out of that click handler in the first place? Let's start there. And it turns out that what we can do, let me get back over here and get to that code behind. What we can do is get rid of this logic and put it into another object. And the XAML-based programming model makes this really, really easy for me because it gives me an interface that I love called iCommand. And I was pleasantly surprised to learn that the iCommand provided to me by Microsoft is the same one that I invariably refactor to when I build out my own command structures for my own applications. And what I mean by that is that if we look at the interface, we've got a very simple interface here. And instead of putting that code in my code behind, I can put it into an implementation of this iCommand, and my XAML application will know about it. I can make it know about it. And the way I do that, this is a little funny for me. Learning MVVM, Model View View Model, which is the pattern that we're sort of refactoring to here, threw me off kilter a little bit. And here's why. Because that command that I create to replace this logic is exposed via this guy, a view model. So you see this class, main page view model. Typically, a view model in my world had always been a very dumb value type object. This one has a little bit of functionality to it. And the functionality that it has is that whenever I change something on the view model, I let whatever's watching me know that something changed, a property changed, for example, and I hang properties off this view model. It turns out I hang commands off this view model. So this command that I've created up here, I then implement, or rather instantiate, inside the constructor of this view model. Here it is. I hang it off as a property. Here it is. And now over in my XAML, rather than using a button click handler, I can instead bind to a command. Oh, I guess you actually have to remember the binding syntax. Thanks. And it's list music command. We good there? I think that's actually good. So I should get a run. Did that not? Let's run it and find out. Now that's declarative behavior at the UI level, so there we go. We know that that music button still works. That means it's calling out to the command. We can prove that even more forcefully. Let me get rid of the app. By going again into our code behind and just killing that method. Talk a little bit about what you and your team played with recently.
For?
Well, just the idea of a higher level refactoring. It's an interesting idea.
We had the idea of refactoring. for this exact pattern that you can provide a guided experience to refactor from a code behind file to the MVVM pattern that will provide tooling that would assist you at each stage of the things, doing essentially the things that you would do manually, refactoring
so
to command.
Would it be cool if Visual Studio could help me do things like not just extract interface, but could help me do things like take this click handler and turn it into a command? That'd be nice. It's the same logic that we find over here inside of our execute method, so perhaps that makes sense. Cool. Now, there's something that this guy's still doing, and I get to write a test, the test that we were looking at earlier that says known folders, looking at those known folders. That test is actually testing the command. See this command? And so this allows me to test what would otherwise be flat-out untestable code by pushing it over into that command. But I still have this problem that the way I've implemented my command is that I'm still making use of this known folders.music library. And not only that, but check out what I'm doing here. Just in order to unit test this thing, because I'm not quite sure how to deal with async, I make it not be async. This was actually hard to figure out. So I make it not async so that I can get stateful testing against it. I have seen this in production code. I'm getting a nod from a few people. There's another way. The other way might look like this. We have a command, and it takes a strongly typed parameter to the execute method, iStorage folder, which happens to be what my music folder library really is. It's an iStorage folder. It takes that as an argument. Well, what we know about things that start with interfaces, things that start with I, is that I can make fake ones, and I can pass around the fake ones. And for those who were in yesterday's talk, wouldn't it be cool if we could have fakes that Visual Studio just make for you? Well, yeah, it will someday. In the meantime, we can still use the fact that this is exposed via interface to hand roll our own, which is what we're going to do here. So I've got a fake iStorage folder. This is in my test project. And we'll go ahead and implement this interface. Boom, it's huge. And it turns out that the very last thing in this file, you don't want to watch me type this, believe me, so I'm going to go pull it out. Is the code that lets me test that async call. Now, how's this work? I'm going to return back a task and then operate on that task in my unit test. And that, in that task, I'll have this iReadOnly list of storage items that I can use to bind up to that list box. And so we come down here and look at that. This should pass. Oh, gotta take the comment off our test class. Let's just go to outcome. Storage items were mapped properly. That was the first one that ran. I've still got those 900 tests out there, but it ran the new test because it knew that one was new. The fact that I've got those 900 tests still in my project doesn't really hurt too badly. All right. Now, if we look here, I've done some lame demo calculator stuff, which it says, lame demo calculator stuff. And the reason I've done this is so that we can talk now about the MS test variations that we discussed earlier. Remember, we said there are several different MS test runtimes out there. So there are some differentiating features about the one that's for Windows application or Windows Store applications. So I can say test data method, and I can, data test method. This is a feature that is in update one. And now I can say data row, and I can pass in 1 + 2 = 3. Oops. And I can say 4 + 4 = 8. And what I'm doing here is I'm effectively setting up a data set. What am I missing? Count mismatch. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. Is my human compiler seeing anything? Well, that stinks. Well, 10 minutes ago it worked.
This one?
We'll do this. You see it?
Oh, no. Do you have the...
Say it again. Get the test method attribute off it. Good idea, sir. Look at that. Thank you. That's one differentiating thing, because it turns out that you'll find that data row, data test method feature in the MS Test unit testing framework for Windows Store applications. Remember, we used to be, if you've been using MS Test for a while, you probably are used to binding to data sources. Still there. It's just another thing. So it's really a feature parity with some other unit testing frameworks. Another thing that we might be interested in is what happens when my application throws exceptions. And so we might expect exception. Remember this? We've been doing this in MS Test forever. But that's not there. Well, in this particular version of MS Test, the one for the unit or for the store apps, there's a new assert throws exception. This is a much cleaner way to control our expected behavior of whatever the thing is we're testing that's going to throw an exception. So I simply say assert.throwsException and give it the type of exception I'm expecting, and then invoke my system under test. In this case, my calculator, and I'm doing 1 / 0. So let's run this guy. There he is. And our test passed because, in fact, we are throwing that exception. All right. What do you guys think? There is a big investment in making sure that we're still going to be able to be good test-driven developers in Windows Store application development. And keep these things in mind. Don't try to get around async. Exploit it in your unit tests. MVVM is absolutely the way to go to divide up your concerns inside your user interface. And that assert.throws, that's a nice little gimme too. This is the namespace you're seeing at the top of the unit testing framework, which is different than the old or than the one that we would use for MS Test. Sorry, it's not old, it's just two different ones. So we have one MS Test for the standard .NET CLR, and that's in a different namespace. All right, here's what I would ask you to go away with. Test-driven development is not an exception anymore. If you're not doing this, you might consider it. We considered it so much that we now have a genuine test-first developer experience built into Visual Studio. We are going to keep caring about this. Async and MVVM are your buddy. Any questions? Please step to the center aisle and we can discuss them. Otherwise, Josh and I will be at the Visual Studio ALM booth for a few minutes. And if anybody wants to talk there, thank you all very much.
Thanks.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
Will you bring back PEX?
PEX is not gone. It is a Microsoft research project, which you are free to use at any time, sir. It is not a product.
Right. But integration into Visual Studio 2012?
I believe the Microsoft research team will probably care about that at some point.
I got a question.
Yes, sir.
Do you guys have any information about the availability of these tools on the phone? I saw one of the samples the other day, and a guy's running in a test runner, totally disconnected to the Visual Studio experience. So, I mean, presumably that's going to come on stream, and it will be integrated at some point. But do you guys have any input on that?
I don't think I have any direct announcements.
I wouldn't. I don't know what demo you saw, but I have seen several people, Rocky Lotka being one of them, who has a unit test framework that he runs on the phone. That's not, that one I know is not a product of ours. I'm not familiar with one that runs on the phone like that that we make. Maybe, I don't know.
No, I think it was part of the toolkit. It built an application to actually do the test running, but there was no integration between the unit test he was actually building and running it in studio.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so I mean that's what we really want to get to. Yeah, it's the unit test in all that wonderful rich framework that you've got there, running on the phone, not run it, pull it back, or he said you can connect these things together.
Yes, sir.
Dealing with log files.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
You can tell my level of expertise on the subject, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I would direct you to the phone team directly.
As would I.
For any disclosures around the phone tooling.
But there's no information on sort of timescales or, I mean, is that sort of, I mean, presumably that's the phone team that look after that.
Yeah, I don't have any knowledge of the phone team's timescales.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, portable libraries are testable in Visual Studio natively, so there's that. Yes, sir.
Hi, I've been a TDD practitioner for many years now. I do it because it's the only way that makes sense to develop software for me.
Good for you.
And many of my workflows benefit greatly from having a create unit test function in Visual Studio. Okay. And I don't know, I maybe I misunderstood you a bit at the beginning. It sounded like what you were saying was, you know, we're thinking about it incorrectly if we're doing that. And you shook your head there just now, so
yeah,
I'm going to give you
clear.
An opportunity to walk that back a little bit.
I appreciate that. When I think about that feature, think about what I've seen people do with it. So if I right-click generate unit tests for a legacy code project that is a million lines long, that's probably not the best way to get there from here. But that tended to be how most people use the feature. I probably use it the same way you did, sir, which is to say I would probably stub out the outward-facing interface of some concrete type, right-click, build my tests, and now I start building out the internal function and methods. Is that right?
That's one of the several workflows, yes.
Yeah. That's very useful.
We are interested in this scenario. We feel it's a valid scenario. We're interested in bringing it back, but we feel that we want to be a little bit careful so that we don't potentially do the legacy code type generation where you end up with kind of a bad experience. So we're actively looking to identify the critical scenarios and bring them back and enable them for a true TDD type experience as opposed to
do you have a workaround really in the meantime that you guys use? I mean, what do you do when you're in that scenario?
Oh, we just add a new test unit project and then set the references.
I'll tell you what I'm doing right now, and it's not good. I actually keep 2012 and 2010 open at the same time, and I switch back and forth between them, and that sucks.
Okay.
I would suggest code snippets are your buddy.
Yeah. If you want, I'll be at the ALM booth. We can talk. I'd be interested in talking to you more about this.
Yes, sir, here in front.
Thanks. So you showed how to test your view model, but what about testing your view or your controls?
That, in my mind, the reason we didn't go into it is because it's no different than testing anything else. Because once you're down to that level, that typical model level, you're talking about a business access layer almost. And at that point, it's just unit testing the way we've always thought about it.
I'm thinking more like something similar to Coda UI testing.
Oh, you want to touch the top of the glass?
The view, yes.
The top of the view. And you're talking specifically about Windows 8 applications?
Yes. Controls and views.
I am completely ignorant of a technology that does that at this time.
WPF has it. So.
Sorry?
WPF has that.
Yes, that's correct. Mm-hmm. But I don't know about Windows Store applications.
So no plans on that either?
As I say, I'm just completely ignorant of that story. I don't have it. Sorry. Yes, sir, in the back.
Hi again. None of the Visual Studio 2012 Windows Store default projects, such as the Grid app, support, you know, are built with MVVM and tests and et cetera. So do you know, first question is, do you know of a sample project that, such as the Grid app that is built that way with async tests, et cetera?
Do
and
I know?
Second question is, okay. Well, do you, something on CodePlex or something that would actually give us a direction instead of just your simple demo here, like a full Grid app with tests, et cetera. And then the second question is, maybe in the future you guys could, you know, push for the default projects to actually be testable and implement some kind of MVVM. Right now there's the Silverlight toolkit, and the answer is port that to Windows 8. And that's a little bit too much work.
So it's starting to get on the edge of my familiarity, but I believe the Patterns and Practices team has something that's similar to, I think, what you're describing. I don't know if anybody else is familiar with it, but I think I've seen the PNP team has what you're actually looking for.
One other thing that I heard you say is I wish that when I said new Grid application for Windows Store application, that I also got an accompanying unit test project, and that unit test project had some stubs in it maybe or some some wrappers for commands, because if we did that, then that would sort of drive the MVVM adoption. I think that's a brilliant idea, sir. And I'm going to think a bit more about that and probably start making some noise. I think that's a great idea.
Also interesting is that the project system for Visual Studio is an extensibility point. So
it's actually quite easy to do if you've ever done this before. It's really just dragging and dropping some files around on the file system and then packaging those things up as a zip, and you can make your own project templates and then file or item templates. It's an easy thing to do. So this sounds like a nice community project too.
Great. Thank you.
You bet.
So Steve. I have yeah, thanks.
Oh no, here no, we go. No, no. Here we go.
I have two easy questions. Seriously, they're easy. The first one, certainly I laud the removal of the expected exception attribute, because we all know that that was a horrible idea from unit testing 1,000 years ago, and we're all glad to see it die. However, the choice of doing that in the Windows 8 testing version of the framework, combined with adding things like data row and so on, I think you're going to tell me, and I'm hoping, that the answer to that was alluded to earlier when you talked about different release cycles for these frameworks, and it's reasonable to expect that those things that may appear in the Windows 8 version of MS Test are actually going to eventually backport into a subsequent release of the other versions of MS Test for which they're equally applicable. Is that a reasonable assumption on my part when the release cycles align and all the stars are beautiful?
Well, I would agree with your assertion that that sounds like a rational thing to do. I cannot guarantee you that it will
it
be
It seems
done.
Unusual, because the honest thing is when you started showing me there's a different framework for Windows 8, you know, store apps and so on, I thought, oh, good, we're going to see something that would be uniquely applicable to Windows 8 store apps in the testing framework. And instead, what I saw were bits that would seemingly be applicable to all of the versions of the MS Test framework. So I'm just trying to sort of reconcile that distinction in my head.
What I didn't show you, Steve, is that there is a particularly special story for Windows Store applications. Stop by over here and we'll talk about it. It turns out that we have to actually package the unit testing frameworks.exe and its accompanying libraries inside the application manifest and run it under a different runtime. So there are some extremely specific things that the Windows Store application framework has.
That makes sense from a mechanical execution point of view. I'm really talking about more about the developer-facing side of the framework, which is, you know, the assertion syntax, the attributes that are available, and all the rest of that for me to describe the scope of my tests, right? I mean, am I understanding that that part is not really so Windows 8 store app specific? Is that right?
These are different teams that make different tools, and I'm not on any of them.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Yeah. I'm just trying to understand.
Unfortunately, this is all I have to share with you.
Yeah,
right
no, that's fine.
So the different frameworks have slightly differing goals and different release schedules, and it would be nice if they unified. I agree with you. That's
well, I'm not. I understand even the reason for different release cycles, and that seems reasonable to take advantage of. I'm just wondering about whether or not different release cycles implies like entirely different sort of philosophical focuses on things, where we won't ever, for example, see the data row attribute appear in the .NET version of MS-10.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Is really what I'm trying to get to. Right?
Yeah,
because that seems equally applicable across pretty much all of those four instances of the MS test framework you were talking about.
Yeah, I tend to agree, and I'll take your feedback to the various MS test teams.
Okay. And the second question I have is actually shorter, I think, which is when you were talking about. Well, actually, I thought that was going to be the short one. So
I'm playing.
But the second question actually is when we were looking at the your continuous test running scenario. I think I understood you to say that you're going to detect newly written tests that haven't been executed yet and execute those. And we did see that. Are you also going back and doing code path execution analysis in order to figure out which existing tests that haven't been touched have been touched by changes to the source code under test or not?
No, that's more clever than we've implemented.
Okay.
So,
are you thinking about heading there at some point, officially or unofficially?
It's an interesting idea. I wouldn't say we're... I wouldn't say we're planning, but it's definitely an interesting idea. I mean, it starts to get a little bit into some of the complexities of doing...
it's hard and non-deterministic, but at the same time, to sort of say, we're going to automatically rerun the tests that have changed, and if everything that used to be green that you didn't rerun is still green, plus the new stuff is green, you're green, is sort of not really true.
No, we very much think that we have a lot of ideas and thoughts around the idea of basically running the tests that you want. But that question is simple to state and very hard to answer, especially when it comes to tooling. But we've had a number of ideas and a number of different things. Yeah. We are really interested in it, but it's not there currently.
It's challenging.
Yeah, so it is a challenging problem, especially what you use to decide that, whether you do code path analysis, which provides some data, but maybe not always the correct answer, and some of the other techniques. So I could say that I wouldn't be surprised if it shows up in the future, but there's no nothing that it's a thing that we definitely like and really talk about quite frequently. But
for what it's worth, I know you're in a challenging problem space, but I appreciate the effort. I'm happy with the direction.
Yeah, no,
so
we
keep it up.
We like that stuff.
That,
so.
All right, thanks a lot.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so basically all the examples were on C# and XAML, and I was wondering if there's, I understand that there's a similar story for C++, but what about JavaScript, and is that something you're going to be working on, or are you just relying on adapters?
So we have had this exact discussion within the last 48 hours internally, and I don't have an answer yet, but what I can tell you is that JavaScript is important to us.
Well, obviously.
And unfortunately, what you're seeing to some extent right now is a bit of a tooling lag. As new features are really adopted within Windows, we have to, unfortunately, catch up to that a little bit. But the good news is that we now have that quarterly update cycle so that we can get these types of new features, well, we can get new features to you quicker.
Okay,
but
so,
the flat-out answer you're looking for, are we going to support JavaScript and HTML5 Windows Store applications in the unit test runner? I don't have an answer for that at this time.
Yeah. So some of the things that might be interesting is we actually had an intern project running this summer that was a JavaScript-based app, and the team actually kind of explored some of this space, and they were actually able to set up quite a lot of tests basically using the Jasmine unit test engine, although they couldn't get to the actual Windows 8 UI type testing, but they were still able, basically by following the MVVM pattern, they were still able to pull a lot of their tests out and still be able to run them using the Jasmine tests that basically run through Chutzpah to analyze a lot of their stuff. It wasn't all of it, but it was a chunk of their application code.
So the Chutzpah adapter calls out to
JavaScript.
Jasmine.
And then Jasmine.
Yeah, so that's been my experience too, I have to say that C# and XAML is pretty well known. If you already unit test in WPF or Silverlight, you can take most of that back to Metro. But with JavaScript, the skills you have probably do not translate. So you can do some testing with Jasmine or QUnit or whatever, but It's very limited. Like you said, you can't reach out to WinJS.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of there are a lot of dead ends, and the default projects, the Grid app and Split app, aren't designed well for testing as well. So those are really difficult problems for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's an area that we care about, that's very important to us, but that, you know, in all honesty, there's a lag. There's a tooling lag we haven't yet addressed.
I think it's more than a tooling lag. The project structure itself, the code that's generated by the templates is difficult to work with.
You're talking to two guys who agree with you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, so okay. Thank you.
And we also have an equal we have equal influence on the outcome of our opinions.
Yeah.
I understand. All right.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. You all very much.